Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Jim White, and I'm an alcoholic. And most important thing, yes, sir. Do you get 10%? Oh, well, tried, you know, what the heck, you know, pass the buck. My name's Jim White, I said, and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. What the hell, I don't know. I knew people that drank funny. I knew people that drank a lot, but not me. There's a pamphlet in Alcoholics Anonymous in regards to the keeping it simple. It said, who, me? And we all come across that question, I think, sometime in our life. I'm a South Erie Roundhead, which means I lived around 26th and State and Peach and Glenwood Park Avenue in the area there. We had the traditional bars up there that put the in our family that was no thumbs down on drinking and that there. Kohler's Brewery was just down the street from us and that, so I mean there was no problem there. I was raised on Kohler's lager beer as a kid, and how it worked was that my grandmother and three of her friends on Friday night, they would have their penny ante poker, and we kept the beer in the kitchen, in the shed, back in the shed, and they would sit there and they would raise us on Kohler's lager beer. Some of you don't remember this. Mohawk Valley, Limburger cheese in a wooden box, and Bermuda onions, and pumpernickel bread. And that was their treat. That was their treat during their penny ante poker. And of course, they had their lager beer. Well, when they needed beer, they'd say, for one of the boys, would you go get us some more beer? Well, you ever notice how beautiful that taste was? That little corner of the bottle, that last little bit of beer, and you went out in the shed and you got four of them. You know, oh boy, it tasted good, you know. And that was the way we were raised. So a beer was no fear, alcohol was no fear. Had a funny uncle, had a real funny uncle. He would come to the back door sometimes, all shotted up, all beat up looking and that. And my grandmother would invite him in, and one of his buddies, and she'd feed him in that there, and talking that there, and they would leave. And about 5, 6, 7 months later, he'd be coming up to the front door, and he'd be spiffier than hell. I mean, boy, he was all dressed up, clean shaven, hair combed, everything in that there, you know. And he was allowed to come into the front door. Well, it wasn't until after I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I found out that those spiffy times in his life was the times he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was not drinking. Which reminds me of the story of Pat and Mike. Michael was the neighborhood drunk and that there, and Pat was the neighborhood patrolman, police officer. And up until Mike dies, Pat, the cop, didn't get to the funeral home till the morning of the funeral. And he's standing in line, and the wife is there saying to everybody, and he could hear, oh, doesn't he look so nice? Oh, isn't he looking so nice? Doesn't he look so good? And by the time Pat got up there, she says, oh, Patrick, she says, our good friend, you took care of him so well. Doesn't he look good? Patrick stepped back and looked, and said, by golly, he should. He hasn't had a drink in 3 days. Keep it simple. I'm going to flash through the high school. Drank up a storm in high school. Made Raisin Jack in the basement. Put it in mason jars. Hauled it to school. Got all kinds of hell, because everybody got sick and drunk in that there for 3 days at Academy High School, and they didn't know where it happened. Well, it was the Raisin Jack we made in the basement. And it was a little wicked. Went through high school, dropped out of high school. Oh, I didn't drop out of high school. What the hell? I drank my way out of high school. I mean, you realize you had to get up in the morning at 8 o'clock to go to school. When you got a hangover, you don't do that. Forget it. Alcohol. Oh, did it get in trouble? How many of us remember our days of alcoholic luck? Remember alcoholic luck? Oh boy. Woke up in the morning and said, oh boy. Oh boy, was I lucky. You know, the car's out there. You know, I'm in a place where I'm home. I know where I'm at. You know, oh boy, am I lucky. Well, I had that. I got to have the gift of alcoholic luck. I ran into a little bit of a legal problem when I was just turned 21, and the situation was that I took one of those inventories. I didn't know it was an inventory then. I learned that I had the dumbest feet in the world, because when the detective car pulled into the garage and I was walking across, I was working for an automobile agency, and I was walking across the floor area there, and the two detectives got out and they says, James, I want to talk to you. Well, nobody ever called me James. That's a legal name. I was always called Red White. And I learned then that I had the dumbest feet, because they stopped. And I stopped and stood there. The dumb feet didn't move, you know. And alcoholic luck. We make it down to the old police station at 7th and Peach. This is the old police station, the red one. And we're at the front desk up there, and off to the left here was the chief of police's office. And he happened to be looking out that there, and he happened to recognize me, and he walked out and he says, aren't you Marion's son? And I says, yeah. He says, well, let's see what's happened. And he grabbed the papers and we went in his office. And he said to me, he says, tell you what, kid. He says, here's what I'll do. He says, you can get yourself in the military. He says, as soon as possible. He says, I'll take care of this. And boy, oh boy, did I ever. I left that police station, shot over to the federal building, went down cellar, and again, taking an inventory is not new to us. I think we all know that. Because I got down there and I looked around in the recruiting office and I saw that Navy poster and I said, oh, that ain't for me. I said, them sailors, you know, they go way out in the water. I mean, I've gone out in Lake Erie, but these guys go way out where you don't see no land. I said, that ain't for me. The Air Force I knew wasn't for me, because I was a dummy. I was a dropout. I was, they had educated, smart people in the Air Force. The Marine Corps, definitely not for me. I wasn't a fighter. I was a drinker and a lover, you know. I wasn't going to go jump in the Marine Corps and start getting the hell beat out of me, you know, or something like that. So, but there is one that takes all. It is designed for guys like me. It was called the Army, the U.S. Army. And they even had a spot in the U.S. Army designed for me. It was called the Infantry. You know, pick and shovel, helmet, rifle. Dig a hole, get in it, and stay alive. And that was it. No brain work, no brain, no thinking, no mathematics. So at the age of 21, I piled myself into the United States Army. Boy, what a trip that was. Hit Fort Knox, Kentucky. Was there, what, a month? They said, okay, you guys, you can go. You got permission now to go to the PX. Well, I went up to the PX up there at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and boy, was it a dream. It was heaven and hell. I mean, you had to do a little thinking, but it didn't take a guy with my kind of brain to think it. I had to get in line to get a glass of beer. Now you go up, you get in the line, it takes you maybe 10, 15 minutes to get that one glass of beer. Go back to your table, sit with your buddies, drink the glass of beer, another 10 minutes. Oh no, not me. I pull out that old dollar bill, boy, and I get up and I get in that line and I'm doing some searching. And I find that nice big old-fashioned silver beer tray. And I grabbed that beer tray and I walked up to that draft line system there and I laid it down and says, fill it up. And they start pouring the glasses. Well, at that time there, you this is going to kill you. At that time there, you could buy 8 ounces of draft beer for 10 cents. Well, I had a buck to start with, you know. I mean, that was openers, you know. Man, put 10 in there. I went back with 10. I didn't set it in the middle of the table the guys were around. I sat it in front of me. That's mine, you know. Hey, I don't know anything about this sharing business and that there until I got here, but for right now, it was me. So I wrapped that up real quick. Drank my wave, had pretty good. Got down to Louisville, Kentucky, going down on the weekend passes and that there, hitting all the bars and that there, the Brown Hotel, the Rocky Marciano restaurant and that there, all the other ones. Coming down the highway one day, I was looking out the bus window and I saw this sign and it said, J.W. Dent Bonded Bourbon. I says, by God, they named that after me. J.W. Well, it was bonded bourbon. I don't know what it was. It was brown stuff in a bottle. That's all I knew. So I get off the bus and I step out in front of the bus depot in Louisville. Across the street was Denny Moore's. And down the street there was a place that was called the White Stallion Inn. And it looked like a classy place. So I figured that's where this bourbon's going to be at, you know, because I knew he, not at Denny Moore's. Denny Moore's was strictly a bottom shelf shot in beer. So I go down there, and by God, I go into the guy, and I'll have a double JW Dent. Oh, yeah, sure. Christ, damn thing cost almost a buck. A buck? Wow. A buck per. Oh, no. That ain't my. I drank it and that there and thought that was great, but that was a buck was a buck. Drank my way out of there, went to Germany. He sent this guy to Germany. Oh boy. Oh, you thought the war was over when they signed the papers. Hell, when I got there, it was starting up again. Man, I was raising hell. I was tearing up bars. How bad was it? Well, I wound up after one fight with 4 black eyes, busted shoulder, bunch of broken off teeth. Didn't know where the hell I was at, but I woke up and I was on something hard and cold and it was bright lights. I didn't know where I was at. And they said, well, we better get him over to his company, over to his barracks and that. And somehow or another, they moved me out over there. I didn't win that war, but boy, it must have been a hell of a war. But again, too, that was it. Now, I learned to drink warm beer before I got to Germany. And I grew up over in Germany drinking that good old-fashioned warm beer because they didn't have that much refrigeration around at that time. And so I drank my way in the Army, drank my way out. At time for re-enlistment and that there was a little piece of paper on my military folder. It said, unreliable for future military services, which meant you can't re-enlist, kid, you're out. Yeah, we don't want you. Even the Army didn't want me by this time. I left Germany and came back to Erie, Pennsylvania and started out. First thing, of course, you know, you get home and that there, you need a vacation because, I mean, for 3 years I've been protecting you people. Well, not you people, your mothers and fathers, but you people and that, you know. So I needed a vacation, you know, I mean, what the heck? So I start going to the bars. I'd go up to Ray Strube's up on 26th and Myrtle and that area there and all those. And looking for a job. I wanted to look for a job. Because, you know, you can get a job. A lot of guys get jobs out of bars, you know, I thought. So I'd hit that bar about 11 o'clock in the morning, and around about 4 or 5 o'clock, well, I guess I ain't going to get a job, and half in the bag and that there, I'd take off. Well, the guy told me, he said, hey, he says, you know you're eligible for unemployment. Oh, yeah? Wow, great, yeah. He says, yeah, they start taking taxes, blah, blah, blah. Boy, I hit down the unemployment office. And I get down there and I sign up, and I'm eligible for the top dollar at unemployment office. I'm not going to say what year it was, but it was the top dollar at that time was $35. You know, that was the top right there. Well, that required a change of life. I mean, I was getting this $35. I had money I brought back over from Germany and that there. But I had to quit drinking around about 6:30 Sunday. I had to cut it out because I had to be in the unemployment line at 9 o'clock in the morning, line one. 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh my gosh. There's two of those 9 o'clocks a day. I didn't know that until I had to start doing it on Monday. Well, lo and behold, it worked out great. Collecting $35 a week, you know, and I mean, I suffered some financial difficulties. They raised draft beer up a nickel a glass and went up to 25 cents a glass in most of the bars. The clubs went up to 20 cents. And I had to come up with that other nickel, you know, make up the difference. Where am I going to short down here to get crisscross here to get that? So I'd have that extra nickel for the new beer price. Well, lo and behold, guess what happened? Now, they say Alcoholics Anonymous, the old timers in those days and that there, because it wasn't like it is today where you can pick up a phone book or run, you know. It was Alcoholics Anonymous, quiet, bingo. But it works in mysterious ways. Alcoholics Anonymous will ruin your drinking. That is my personal thoughts, and that is a guarantee from me. Alcoholics Anonymous will ruin your drinking. What happens at the unemployment office? The guy gives me the pink slip, and he says, you have to go down and see this guy here for an interview, for a job interview. Oh, that's a three-letter word that scares the hell out of a good alky job. You know, so I go down to this place, and I talk to the guy, and that there, blah, blah, blah. And he says, okay, I got your number. If I need you, I'll give you a call. Within a week later, on a Saturday morning, I mean, when a Saturday morning, when the cobwebs are the thickest, after a Friday night, this guy calls. Ah, well, we need you. Could you come in and go to work? And I knew right away that if I didn't go in, they'd cut my $35 out. So I had to play the game, and I went in. And I got this deal working for this company. Now, I'm strictly what they call a short brain, strong back type of a guy. So I go to work, and it's moving refrigerators, stoves, moving jobs, moving pianos, big organs. So I have to go to work for this guy. So we got done around 3 o'clock Saturday, and I went back. And the guy says, hey, he says, I'll tell you what, he says, come on back Monday morning at 9 o'clock. So I went back at 9 o'clock Monday morning. Worked 5.5-6 hours that day. Then he says, come back the next day. And I know I'm replacing a guy. So he goes, then the fourth day. Finally, I says to the guy, the boss in truck, I says, hey, I says, when's this guy that I'm filling in for, when's he coming back? And he says, oh, hell, he says, we don't know. He says, he was belonging to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he went back drinking and that there, and he's down in North Warren, and we don't know when he's going to come back. what the hell is all this baloney, you know? You know, I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous has spoiled my drinking. I've gone 4 days in a row working 5-6 hours and not drinking. And that's hell. I mean, you don't, that's not right. Alcoholics Anonymous will spoil your drinking. Boy, it just ruined that schedule right to hell. Well, I bounced around a couple other jobs on that there. Like I said, I had a strong back and a weak mind. So it wasn't hard for, you know, a guy that they said, you know, hey, take this rock and move it over there. Well, yeah, I pick it up and I put it over there, as long as I got paid for it. Well, I went to work for a guy that went to school with and that. His father owned the business. Boy, was this a trip. His dad owned the business. Across the street was Friday's, the bar at 11th and Parade. Up the street was Casey's. Down the street between 10th and 11th, there was a bar. Now, to this day, I don't know the name of the bar because I didn't have to know the name of the bar. All I had to know was the sign said Budweiser, Schlitz, Pabst Blue Ribbon. They were hanging in the window, and in between them was a door. And in that door, you could get a drink. I mean, who the hell cares what's the name of the bar, you know? I mean, that didn't bother. Like I said, there was a few other bars that I know I drank in them, but I don't know the names of them. Well, this job led me to meet a real, real weird guy. His name was Lenny Janis. He's passed away, and he's a great guy. You have to go all the way back to years ago to St. Vincent's Hospital because he managed that meeting and that, and took care of it and that. And he would use to pull these dummies on me. And here's where it gets interesting. He would say, I'd walk in there and I'd be, oh. I got one Coca-Cola bottle in one hand and one in the other, and I'm rubbing one across the head to cool the head down, and the other one I'm drinking to cool the pipes down, and he would do one of these. Hey, Jimmy! Oh, you're making this a great day for me today. You know what? He says, you look so good, I'm going to take my wife out for supper tonight. You look great. I don't feel great. And I would see him every day. It would be, oh, Jimmy, there's not a thing going to go wrong in my life today. Not a single thing. And you know what happened? There's two A's in AA, right? One was Lenny. I had to go to this other warehouse, and I'd back the truck up against the loading dock, and bam, and I'd hear this here. Hey, Jimmy, you don't have to hit the building so hard. We're back as far as it can go. You know, it's built here, you know. And I'd go in there, and there's this little guy. His name was Bobby M. And he'd say, hey, Red, he says, boy, he says, you're looking great. He says, you're great. Boy, and then I'd go in another couple other days, and he'd say, hey, Red, he says, boy. He says, you know, he says, my grandmother has a pig farm out in McCain. He says, the boy, he says, you got him beat, you know. And he'd say, you know, he says, I'm going to take the kids to down to the fair or down to the wrestling matches. Or, boy, you made it a great day for me today. Well, I didn't know anything what the hell he was talking about. Well, this went on. Well, of course, you know, being married and having a kid and that there, you know, this situation doesn't go very far, so situations happen. And lo and behold, it happens, you know. And I walks into Lenny's office one day. I says, well, Lenny, I says, I quit drinking. And Lenny looked at me and he looked around and he says, who moved out, you or her? And I said, whoa, said to myself, whoa, how'd he know? You know, how'd he know? Well, I don't talk to my wife about Lenny or any, you know, and I'm pretty sure Lenny didn't talk back, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. Well, man, he didn't have to. Hell, the picture was on the wall. It was me, you know. And between Lenny and Bobby, they've got their heads together and they says, we got an apple on the tree and he's getting ripe. He's one of these days, we're going to get him. Well, you know, it happened. I quit drinking by myself. I could do it by myself. So I set up my program. I set up Monday night television, Tuesday night. I had something going in that there, but I set up a schedule where I wasn't drinking. Because Lenny kept giving me these stupid things that you people have heard. Well, I'm telling you right now, they ain't stupid, and I'm eligible and required by law to use the word ain't. Because that's drinking talk. And that's the way I was. If you ain't drinking, you ain't getting in trouble. Well, I'll tell you what. Lenny gave me these dumb things. Hey, Jimmy, if you're going to stay sober, you got to be with sober people. Oh, holy Christ. I don't know what he... Like I said before, I knew people that drank funny. But I didn't know any people that didn't drink. I didn't hang around with people who didn't drink. I mean, I don't know what they do. I mean, and then I thought, well, wait a minute. He's now talking about, now Hardin County and Kentucky's a dry county. I'm not going to move there because they don't sell booze there. And I sure as heck ain't going to move place out in the west where they got that big singing choir where they don't drink. I ain't going out there, you know. So, boy, you know, right real quick, you know. That thought there doesn't stick too well. And he gives me another one, you know. Stay dry, stay in dry places. I don't know any place dry. You know, I mean, any place I went, there was had to be some booze or something, had to be going on or something like that. So I didn't know what to do with that statement. Well, dummy me in my big mouth. Things were going along. And I said to Lenny, I said, you know, Lenny, I says, I'm going to go to night school and get my high school diploma. He says, hey, he says, that's a good idea. He says, what do you have to do? I said, well, this is Tuesdays and Thursday nights from 7 o'clock until 10 o'clock. I says, you go to school and take the classes you didn't take when you were in high school. He says, hey, it's a good idea. They don't sell booze there. Oh, stay dry, stay in dry places. That simple. It was that simple. Oh, so I set up the old program. Monday night on television, watch the movie. Tuesday night, night school. Wednesday night, sit on my hands and bite my nails. Thursday night, night school. Friday and Saturdays, I'd go to high school football games. Stay dry, stay in dry places. Well, they don't sell booze in the football. So I went to football games Fridays and Saturday nights. And of course, there was that one Saturday night I was at the football game, and I got the ham full of newspapers, and it's pouring down rain. And I mean, it's not even the first half yet, and it's pouring down rain, and I've got the newspapers over my head and all this. And halftime comes, and the guys say, hey, guys, come on. He says, I got the heck, there's enough of this here. Let's go up to the club. Let's go up to the club. And you know what the hell slipped into my mind? Stay dry, stay in dry places, and I'm soaking wet. I mean, it's pouring, and I'm standing there soaking wet. I said, I'll stay and wait for the game over. And that's what I did, and I managed to get through that day without a drink. But it worked. Lenny gave me some other crazy thoughts that you'll hear in your time in AA. I hope you hear them. If you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. Oh, cripes almighty, I never got drunk on the first. Why, hell, that first drink just loosened up the gums and cleaned the teeth, cleaned the tongue off a little bit, got a little bit of, cleaned a little dust out of the throat, you know, didn't even know what it tasted like. The second one, well, that was a little cooler. You could feel it was cold in that there, and it tasted good in that there. And then the third one, guy down the bar hit the number or something, and it's to give everybody a drink, so the third one was probably a free one, and that tasted good. But first drink, you don't take the first drink. Well, I mentioned that to Lenny. I flipped off some kind of remark. He says, look, kid, he says, I'll tell you what I want you to do. He says, I want you to go up there to the railroad tracks. He says, I want you to wait for the train coming down. He says, when that train comes flying down, he says, I want you to go out and step in front of that locomotive. He says, when that train gets done with you, he says, I want you to pull yourself together, come back here, and convince me the caboose did all the damage. Now, you have to take these things lightheartedly, but they are definitely serious. Keep it simple. You don't take the first drink, you don't get drunk. You want to stay sober, you stay with sober people. No, you got to find them first. Where the hell are they at? They're hiding. They're hiding in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know that places, you know, that little thing in the, Jerry might remember, on the sports pages, the old Erie Dispatch Herald, there used to be a little thinking column that says, have a drinking problem, and then it had a phone number. That's all it said. Have a drinking problem, and that's all it, and a phone number. And that's how you found Alcoholics Anonymous. They had an answering service that worked periodically, depending on, well, as I know today, as it was depended on how the contributions were to people, the groups, to the answering service. I think at that time there, I think it used to cost like $12, $14 a month for the answering service. So that's how you found it. My introduction to AA was, like I said, was with Bobby and Lenny giving me these little old simple things. I have to say that I had problems with my thinking. I still have problems with my thinking. I don't care what the hell I think, you know, as long as I'm not drinking, you know. I enjoy things. So I do things to keep me sober. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a bunch of years. Paul asked me 2 weeks ago to lead, and I was able at that time, not knowing he was to reach in my back pocket and pull out my notebook so I could write down phone numbers, the information about where to lead and that there, 6:30 lecture. These things don't weigh much. And you can get them free if you know how to work it. Now, you happen to know how to work it. Now, these are from Granger. So if you know anybody in the mechanical field or in business and that there needs Granger and that there, say, hey, next time you go to Granger's, ask the guy for four or five notebooks. You know? They don't weigh much. What the hell? They're just sitting in your back pocket. There ain't nothing back there but fat anyhow. So I still carry literature. I carry a ballpoint pen. Now, this ballpoint pen, this is a new one. This is the one my daughter sent me from Phoenix, Arizona. The one day at a time pen. I've seen them starting to show up in the Erie area. Copycats trying to steal my way of staying sober, but you can. Everything I have that helps me stay sober is yours. Because if it works for me, I know it'll work for you. It'll work for you. And keep it simple. I do, I listen. My sponsor was smart. Oh, is he a whip? You know what he told me to do one time at a meeting? He said, hey, Jimmy. He says, look, he says, here's what I want you to do. He says, I want you to take your left hand. I want to put it over your left ear. And during the meeting, I want you to keep it there. So what you hear in this ear stays there. And it was that simple, you know? I mean, we're past the time when it goes straight through, you know? I mean, how many times have we sat in a bar and a guy said, "You shut off, what are you doing? Shutting me off." He didn't, you know, "I didn't hear you. What'd you say?" Or the last time we get told the guy, "Well, I told the guy to stand up and he thought I said shut up and then he punched me." You know, stuff like that happens to you. But it don't happen in the AA meetings. But keep it simple. Now, I'm going to tell you my last drunk. We can run a deal short. Because there was an old-time saying in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you can't remember your last drunk, maybe you haven't had it yet. So don't forget that last drunk. That last drunk for me was I had quit drinking. There was no high school football game in the city or the county that night. But on television, and this is how I have to tell you, it's the only way I can remembered it, was that Baltimore Colts were playing on television at a nighttime color telecast of an NFL game. And I thought, well, geez, I could watch that. Well, my brother John was a Colts fan. So I went up to his house, because he had a color TV. And so we're in the house a few minutes and that there, and he says, "You want a beer?" And I said, "Oh, no, 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 no." And he says, no. He says, "You know I quit drinking." Be alert. He says, "Hey, quit drinking didn't solve any of your problems, has it?" And he was right. Hanging on the job by the fingernails, still separated from the wife, looking for all kinds of other problems. The doctor, when I went to him and told him about my nerves and that there, and didn't say anything about my marital problems, didn't say anything about my drinking problems, but he gave me a bag of pills. And I don't remember whether he said take two when you're nervous or four when you're nervous every 2 hours, but the numbers two and four were in there someplace. So I got this bag of pills. Now, if you're quitting drinking by yourself, you know that when you woke up, man, you were ready, boy. You were ready for something, you know. And like I said, two and four is always a good number. But I don't know which way it was supposed to go. So I said to my brother John, I says, "You know I quit drinking." He said, "Well, you know, didn't solve any of your problems." Well, that was that quick. He was right. I still had all these problems. And I said, "Well, I'll have one." Well, alcoholic luck would have it, my brother John was drinking 16 ounces, and that was one. And I remember having the beer. The next thing I remembered, I was on the phone with my wife at the time, giving all kinds of hell and that there, and raising all kinds of hell, and saying, "Well, the hell with the world, I'm going to commit suicide." So I headed down State Street. At that time there, the fire department had a rescue wagon. It was an old bread cup. It was an old bread cup truck, old former bread truck. And that was the emergency rescue wagon. And they used the amber lights. And he was coming up State Street, and I'm heading for the public dock to commit suicide. And I said, bang. I said, "Don't worry, Charlie, I'll be with you in a little bit. You come down and get me." You know, and I'm heading down. The next thing I remembered, I was in a phone booth. And I'm talking to a Catholic priest. Don't hit me, sister. But boy, did I run the rolling coals over him. Boy, I told him what I thought, you know, about the divorce laws and the... And all it, oh, geez. Well, something happened. A voice came over the phone and said, in the nice, clear, lady-type voice, "I am sorry, sir, but your time is up." Now, is it Gabriel or Gabrielle? Who's blowing the horn, you know? Yeah. So the next thing I remembered, as I heard the squelch and the address, many of you know the squelching sound in a police car, from inside the phone booth, I remember feeling the cop pushing on the door and that, trying to get the door open. He got the door open, and he pulled me out of the phone booth, and I had my hands on the phone. And the cop had to take one finger at a time and pry my hand off the phone. My hand is still in this position. They laid me on the concrete. I laid there, and the cop put one hand on my shoulder and one hand here, and he went to straighten my arm. And he says, I can't move his arm. He's stiff. And I remembered that. I remember hearing the police wagon, the old paddy wagon, pull up. They picked me up and they slid me inside the paddy wagon. All this time I am laying there trying to do one thing that you have all done all day long and never even gave it a thought. As I remember laying there and I was throwing my head back. Because what I was trying to do was I was trying to open my eyes. And I couldn't even open my eyes. They slid me in the back of the paddy wagon and they slammed the door, put the lock on it. That quick, I just came right out of it. Right out of it. And the first thing that came to my mind was good old Elf Alky thinking, I gotta get out of here. Well, this is a police paddy wagon, or a police wagon. So I go all the way to the back of the, or the front of the wagon, and I run like hell and I hit that door. Well, bang, slam, boom. Down I go, and you know the door ain't gonna open. Next thing I heard was a guy say, hey, aren't you Danny White's brother? Ooh, somebody knows me. Oh, well, yeah. Well, sit down and be quiet. And boy, I sat down and be quiet. They took me down to the police station, locked me up, gave me my cigarettes and lighters, and guys that I knew when I worked for the automobile agency, the city drove Chevrolets at that time, and I knew a lot of the city cops and that there, and they dipper dappered and this and that there, you know. Yeah, they came in and said, what the hell are you trying to do? You know, I don't know what, you know, I was going to say, well, I was going to commit suicide. I was never about to say that. And you know the famous alcoholic statement, I don't know. What are you doing that for? I don't know. You know. So they let me out that morning, and the dumb thing was, you know what I did? I called Lenny Janis. I had his phone number from someplace, and I called him. He says, I told you, quitting drinking is serious business. Once you quit and you're off it for a while, you don't go back to where you left off at. You go back to where you would have been if you kept drinking. Right there, that danger zone is right there. That little alcoholic bug, he is in there. He's only sleeping. He ain't dead. He's only sleeping. He's waiting for that little bit of Corby's. In my days, it was Corby's and Four Roses and Calvert's. You know, the high-priced stuff, you know, Seagram 7. You know. That was the way it was. And it was right. I never did this when I was drinking before, so he was right. It is serious business. It doesn't go back to the fun, ha ha ha, sweet swinging days. It goes back to misery more. Well, that lasted until, that was in October. I made it through December, because Lenny's told me, Jimmy, he says, remember one thing. You can make as many excuses to not to take a drink as you use to get a drink. And the same ones you could use in there, you know, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. Only this time you don't drink doing it. December 23rd was a Friday. I walked into Lenny's office, and he says, well, he asked me how I was doing that there, and I says, Lenny, I says, where's the AA meeting at? And this was a Friday, and he says, Jimmy, there's a meeting Monday night at 7:30 in St. Vincent's Nurses Cafeteria, Employees Cafeteria. And don't ask me how, when, where, what, why. But I says, oh, okay, and I walked away. And I said, that SOB gave me a choice. The choice we have today, he gave it to me, to be there or not to be there. He didn't tell me about the Friday night meeting or the Saturday afternoon meeting, Saturday night, Sunday meeting, Monday night. But he says, if you have a chance to be with your wife and kids and that, they're taken. And I said, oh, no. So come hell or high water, I went to my first AA meeting at St. Vincent's Hospital on December 26, 1966. And I walked in the emergency room, girl was over here, little short Italian girl. And I walked into her and I said to her, I says, hey, where's the AA meeting at? She says, you go right straight here, turn right, go straight down the hall to the end, and turn right and keep going. Those were the best instructions I've ever had in my life, because it was right, straight, and I came to my first AA meeting. My first AA meeting was a real swinger. The chairwoman at that meeting wore a white Jackie Kennedy Bell hat, had a blue dress on, and you know what she did? She got up in front of this thing here, and she said, oh, what a beautiful Christmas I had. Oh, what a wonderful Christmas. She says, I wrapped the gifts and cleaned the house and cooked the food, and everybody came over and they unwrapped the gifts and messed the house and ate all the food. Oh, what a beautiful Christmas. And I was sitting back away, and I wanted to reach up and I wanted to punch her right square in the mouth. I didn't have that kind of a Christmas. Thanks to you people. A year later, I did have a similarity of that type of a Christmas, because then I celebrated that 1 year sobriety. And I'll tell you, how did I do it? I do it the same way I do it today. Meetings, and of course, most important, literature. There's not a piece of literature in there that you cannot carry in one hand, and it's not going to kill you. I have literature, well, I used to have a car until the guy plowed into it, but I always have literature. I carry literature on me all the time. I got her right there in my little money thing. So I want to thank you all for my sobriety. How do you do it? 12 steps, 12 traditions. Keep it simple. You got 1 minute. Don't take the first drink and you won't get drunk. And if you can, make it simple. I have my AA lead on my hat. I have the train for the locomotive on my hat. I have the pickle that says that once you're a cucumber and you become a pickle, you can never become a pickle again. Or a cucumber again. I got you thinking. That's the way. That's what they told me. Get you thinking. Keep you thinking, and it works. I have my camel. You know, stay in dry places. I have a set of wings that has a triangle on it. I don't know whether it's going to get me to heaven, but I'll tell you what. They told me in AA, it'll sure keep you around long enough to make a choice which one you want to go. So again, I want to thank you all very much, Paul, for my this opportunity, and thank all of you for listening. And it's 7:30, and I owe you money.